Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Did you bring wine?
I got the glasses.
You guys, I made a quiz.
No, I didn't bring anything, but I'm here to have fun.
Hello, and welcome to the official Broad Wasted podcast where we're drunk on theater. I'm your host, Brian Plofsky, and don't be a piggy. Scooter on over, you king prawn, with that beaker and honeydew, and show me your animal side, or your Swedish chef side. Don't commit a crime and then Rolf, because I'd call you Crazy Harry, you Fozzie Bear, you. Joining us today are the usual Statler and Waldorf, including Kevin Gonzo Jaeger.
Obviously, if you had chosen anyone else, I've been really upset. But also, commit a crime, or commit a murder, I will never forgive you for that. That was so good.
Kimberly, our electric mayhem game master and unofficial babysitter for the hour.
Hello.
And with us today is someone you may have seen in Hamilton as Hercules Mulligan and James Madison. He's also the host of It's Time to Meet the Muppets podcast on Broadway Podcast Network. Let's give a big Broadway-wasted welcome to friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
Hercule Bolin.
I am speechless. That is the greatest introduction I've ever received.
Yeah, feel free to use it in your next bio.
I'm going to take it and call Playbill and say, this is now it.
Yeah.
Please address it accordingly.
Yes, agreed.
Repent every program immediately.
including tonight.
Yeah. We could start with an insert. That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We start every episode with "What are you drinking?"
What are we all drinking?
So let's start the episode the same way this time. Fergie, what are you drinking?
I am drinking my classic. I drink a nice Bullet 95 rye. And then I always have it with a little bit of ginger ale. That's my go-to whiskey and ginger.
Me too.
So funny. When I was like opening this up, I poured the whiskey and I don't know what it was, but the smell hit me and I was like, oh, this really reminds me of the beginning of the pandemic. Like in the beginning when it was like kind of nice for a hot second, when it was like, yeah, I'll start drinking at 2. And then by the time it's 6, I'm buzzed. And then I'm in bed by 9. What a beautiful day. Yeah. Not, you know, before it got all weird and depressing and stuff, but it was just a very delightful reminder. I drank a lot of these during the pandemic and they feel warm and like home.
Yeah. And Zoom. Continues.
And like Zoom. They feel very much like Zoom.
Love it.
Kevin, what are you drinking?
Okay, so I'm drinking bottled water because I just got done with 10 hours of travel today.
Sure did.
I was in Tampa this morning, and I went the 4 hours from Tampa to Jacksonville by car, and then had an hour to breathe at my parents' house and pack my suitcase before I got on the plane and came straight here, and literally made it 10 minutes before our recording to my apartment. So I'm drinking water, but I have lots of stories for this, and it's going to be part of my Kevin's Corner, so stay tuned.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Kimberly, what are you drinking?
Well, my husband came up from the bodega with an orange soda. And so I started with that, but now I didn't know what to put in it. So I just keep sipping it, deciding what will go inside. And mostly I think when I'm done, I'm just going to pour Hudson baby bourbon on the rocks.
Do you know what goes best with orange soda?
What?
An episode of Kenan and Kel.
It sure does. Which you can now watch on Paramount Plus. See?
Really?
Yeah, sponsorship.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm doing that.
Yeah,
that was my favorite show for however long
I ran. I'm pretty sure I've seen every single episode more than 3 times. It used to be called The N, and then it got changed to...
I thought it was Noggin and then The N.
No, those are two separate. So The N, the morning like section the of The N version? Was Noggin, and then The N was like, that's where like Degrassi was, and you know, then they started familiar. Putting all like the old Nickelodeon stuff. But then I think they got their, I think they changed it to Team Nick. I think then it was called Team Nick. And so one of the things that they had was like kind of like a 90s weekend where like from Friday through like midnight of Sunday, it was nonstop 90s Nick. So like All That, Cousin Skeeter, Keenan and Kel, Are You Afraid of the Dark, Salute Your Shorts, like all these like real classic Nickelodeon stuff. And my brother and I were, we consistently recorded every single Keenan and Kel and watched all of them. And so yes. I'm very proud that I know that series very well.
Brian, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking my usual lime seltzer and I pour tequila into it.
Oh, nice. Delish.
Right in the can, as always.
Yeah, you know, keeping it classy. But Fergie, thank you so much for joining us. We're super excited to have you.
We're going to talk Muppets. Be here.
Yeah.
Also, man, like legitimately love the show. Like I've listened to quite a number of episodes. Aww. Love the show. When Kevin told me at an event that we were doing, hey, would you like to come on Broadway? So I was like, you're the Kevin? I remember in my head being like, oh my God, that's the Kevin. The first episode I ever listened to was James's episode. Because sure. James is so funny. I can't remember. Did James drink on the show?
No,
because he doesn't drink. That's what I thought. That was part of what made it so funny.
I think it was also the daytime.
It was also the daytime. Yes.
Any of us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So it's just like a nice, just Broadway, not Broadway, Sid, just Broadway.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Crazy.
That's one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, we talked Twilight Zone a lot in that one. I remember that.
Oh, that's right.
Oh,
yeah. We were in big episode, Twilight Zone, dude.
We were in Shetler, RIP.
Yeah, and then after that episode, he was like, I couldn't tell you guys this on air, but I'm going to be in Hamilton.
Oh, that's right. He announced it the next day.
Yeah.
Right. The next day, he was like, keep your eyes out.
That's right.
Crazy.
Oh, then that was like early 2017. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I didn't realize, I was like going through our episodes for some reason the other day. And I was like, let me just like do a top five. And I was like, James Reinhardt was that far away, like from present day. I was like, oh my goodness.
Wow.
But he's come
amazing.
Back.
Amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, what a guy.
Wild. But we are really excited to have you. And let's just start out with, what's your favorite musical?
Easy good question.
It's you know, stereotypical, it changes a lot. However, the one I continually go back to is Sweeney Todd. And
sure.
The reason for that is because I very clearly remember the first time I was exposed to it. I was in high school. I went to a performing arts high school in Miami, Florida. And for those who know, it's Newell School of the Arts. Go Pigeons. Yes.
Wait, our mascot are the
Pigeons. Yes, because in downtown Miami, there are nothing but pigeons, and they're vicious and probably rabid. And so we were the fighting pigeons.
Yeah.
It was between that or the fighting seahorses. And, you know, it was an art school in the 80s. They picked pigeons.
Were elegant. I feel like if they fought, it would be like West Side Story ballet fighting. Like it would be.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's appropriate that it's pigeons. That's why we don't do sports, because because it's just not for us. We would just dance it out instead.
Yeah.
But I was in some class where the teacher didn't feel like teaching that day, and they just popped in. They popped in the stage version. I think I knew the movie pretty well, I'm pretty sure, but they popped in the stage version. And the movie, I was like, oh, it's bloody, like, you know, Johnny Depp, Alan Rickman, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was good. Like, it, you know, I'm not going to crap on the movie. Like, I don't think it's that bad. I was kind of like fine about it, but it didn't strike me.
Sure.
But when I saw Angela Lansbury do Worst Pies in London, I was so captivated by the way she portrayed the character. And already knowing what happens at the end, I was like, oh, I was like, well, this makes this ending so much worse. I was like, this is so much sadder.
I think,
and it was no, go ahead.
No, we watched it for the podcast, and we said, what did we said, like, if you have to enjoy the movie, you have to watch it as a Tim Burton movie that happens to be doing Sweeney Todd, as yes. opposed to the other way around, because yes. correct. The movie doesn't capture the genius of the show in Sondheim, but it's basically the studio being like, hey, Tim Burton, do your thing. Here's like a property that like whatever, but like also like it's one literally. Of the best musicals ever. And like, you didn't get the musical justice, but the movie's fine. Totally.
But the movie, I think the movie is shot gorgeously. I think, honestly, I love Johnny Depp's interpretation of Sweeney Todd. Now, if you're going to ask me, like, musically, how did you feel about it? It was not great. Like, it was not my favorite part of the film.
That's a good...
Except for Alan Rickman. Like, Alan Rickman was quite literally so perfect as Judge Turpin in every single way. Mm-hmm. And so was, what's his name, who also plays Wormtail. He played the Beetle. Those two... I forget his name.
I don't think I know his name.
I don't think any of us do.
Call him Wormtail.
I think we all just call him Wormtail.
He is one of those names that's spelled like you don't sound it out. It's,
yes. His Peter name Pettigrew. Is... hold on. Hold on. I'll get it. I'll get it. Keep going.
You're going to get it. I know you're going to get it. But basically, like those two...
Spelled funny.
It's an Irish name?
I think so. It's
oh, little, you can't he does look Irish.
Letters because it's like
spelled. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, I hear a dog.
Yeah, that's Ted.
Whoever it is, I love your dog.
His name is Timothy Spall.
I was wrong.
Timothy Spall.
Yeah, Kevin, you really have to sound that one out.
I was like, his name's like Seamus O'Hennessy or something.
So no,
or else it should be.
But yeah, I mean, Alan Rickman's performance is great. The only casting that I'm like 100% against was Helena Bonham Carter's. Only after seeing the stage version, I think it's because like I actually got not an argument, but somebody who had done the show and played Lovett was explaining to me how much they hated doing By the Sea. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Like what she goes, I think it doesn't move the plot forward. I think it's really dumb. I think this, and that. And I went, I don't disagree with you, but in order for us to feel sympathy for when she dies, By the Sea has to be in the show. Like that is absolutely. Perhaps sure. Miss Lovett's most important song, because you finally get a key into why she's the way that she is. You know, you understand everything about her. She's not actually in love with Sweeney. She's in love with the idea that Sweeney could possibly give her what she really wants. And that's what makes him killing her so sad. Anyway, but the whole point is that, like, I think Helena did a great job at making her eccentric in the Tim Burton way that he wanted it to be. But I actually think that Mrs. Lovett is supposed to be somebody that we see as a very strong maternal figure who is incredibly kind. And you don't necessarily picture her being able to be so capable of doing something so evil, you know, especially with understanding who Lucy was and, you know, all of these different things. And so that was kind of the only thing about the movie performance wise that I was like, I'm not really with it, but performance wise, I think the movie and cinematography wise, the movie is gorgeous. It's just musically not that great. And that's what makes it difficult, because the stage show, my favorite part is the music. I think the music overall triumphs the production itself.
Well, the
and I think that's
like
what makes it great.
75% of it.
Yeah, man. You're going to cut the ballads. I should kill you. And however, I understand, like, you know, the ballads, that's such a theater device. Like that just doesn't work for film. You know what I mean? Like it's so smart that they did that.
So good.
Yeah, but it's so good. And I mean, that was the thing, is that I was like, I understand why they cut it. Like as a filmmaker, I wouldn't want that shit in there either. At the same time, I was like, I don't get to hear Sweeney say, attend the tale of Sweeney Todd.
Right.
And it's all about how like you build suspense. Cause like in film, mm-hmm. suspense with like more visuals and kind
with
of
pictures.
Like, yeah. And like, yeah. With, like on stage, the suspense is built by like the harmonies getting stranger and stranger. And
right.
More complicated. Uh-huh. Like when you finally get to that letter where like the judge is going to finally meet Sweeney for the end, that like letter is like so creepy, but it's interesting. You say it just wouldn't work on film. Like it doesn't
work
the same way that it does in an auditorium where you hear five people live singing like those harmonies. You're like kind of off your seat because you're like, oh
yeah. And that's what makes that opening shot. that's why I can't say the movie's bad, because that opening shot, I think, encompasses what was supposed to be where the beginning ballad was supposed to be. Like, you're going through these really dank, dark streets of London, and it's already, you already understand the tone of what we're about to watch immediately. And that takes place for what the opening song would have been, you know what I mean? And obviously mm-hmm. it's not the same, but again, when you're adapting it for film, that really did make the most sense. And so that's one of the rare cases where I'm like, that is a very different experience that I don't honestly always even consider, just because like the Sweeney Todd film is kind of its own thing. It's like they did a film of Sweeney Todd and happened to include some of the songs.
Oh, right. Totally.
That's a good way to put it too. Yeah. We use the same story and some of the music.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what else is a place where suspense is built? Tuesdays in the corner with Kevin.
Kevin's corner.
It is. It's my corner. And
choked on it.
I'm so excited because you were originally a part of Hamilton in the Philip tour. Am I correct?
I was. That is correct.
Before you made your big jump to your Broadway debut, you were on the Philip tour. And excitingly enough, I was in Jacksonville this weekend for my mommy's birthday. And with my mom and my brother and my dad to see Hamilton at the Times Union Center in Jacksonville. And we saw the Philip cast. So my questions today are going to be based on the Jager family experience to see the Hamilton Philip tour. So question one is, what do you think that we had for dinner before the show?
What do you think you had for dinner before the show? And you were in Jacksonville?
Yes, we were in Jacksonville.
Did you have seafood?
Oh, that is a good guess, but no, because my dad is like deathly allergic to seafood. We had some of the pizza that my dad ordered Friday night, because he ordered four large pizzas for four people. And so we were like, why did you do that? And so we just ate pizza because my mom said she wouldn't go out because we had so much pizza in the fridge.
Question. My next guess was Italian. So nice.
Well, question two is, my parents were blown away by the production. Absolutely loved everyone. They were like, these people are so talented. Like, does Broadway know that this is what they're sending out? That's not like, these people should, they should have a second Broadway production. Broadway, my dad was like in love with all these
people.
Yes, they
should. Hell yeah.
My dad was obsessed with all these people.
My Philip family is lit.
There was one person in the Philip company that they would not stop talking about how incredible this person's voice was and how incredible their performance was. I know you think all of them are incredible too. And like I said, my parents love them.
I know, this isn't fair.
The person that they were like, oh my God, this person's voice was just like killing it the whole time.
May I have hints?
Sure. You can ask one.
Okay. Okay. Two questions. First question. Did I perform with this person on tour?
Okay. Now you give two other questions. Cause I don't know.
Cause you don't know. I'm guessing it's a principal, male identifying or female identifying, you know, as far as we know.
This is a female identifying performer.
Okay. Oh. Was it Taria Campbell?
That was me and my brother's favorite. over Stephanie Slay
Park. You, Stephanie Slay Park. Yeah, Stephanie came, because Stephanie started out, I believe, on the Angelica tour as, I want to say, a standby. I've never met this woman, so if she hears this, please forgive me. But she's with my good friend Voltaire, who I love dearly. She joined the tour. I'm trying to remember. She joined the tour pretty shortly after I left, because Aaron joined us in Orlando, which was end of January in 2019. And then Aaron stayed for a year. So she joined January before the pandemic. Yeah. So yeah, you got, I mean, I hear she's wonderful, and everyone that you know, from that tour tells me that she's absolutely lovely. And so I'm very excited to potentially see them.
So Stephanie Slate Park is friend of the show. And so we met her before. And so I was messaging her on Instagram, and my parents were like, our favorite said hello to you. And I was like, yes, I know her. I do. This was like made my mother's night. This was like
magic. Oh my gosh. So, that's too funny.
Third question is, after the show, we got to see Broadwasted Besties, Aaron J. Albano and Nikisha Williams.
My babies. Oh my God.
They came over to meet us for drinks.
Uh-huh.
Aaron had a water because he was exhausted because it was the two doshe. But
Nikisha definitely drank.
Nikisha had a drink. I want to know, can you guess what Nikisha ordered for a cocktail?
That's actually a very good question. I've drank with Nikisha so many times.
Oh, you can ask questions. I'll go with you.
My guess, no, she's not a gin girl. She either had.
I will tell you that it's like it is a cocktail that has like a name, not like a.
Oh, she had like a cocktail. Okay.
Cocktail.
Oh.
Did she have a dark and stormy?
No, but that sounds delicious.
Is that what it's called?
Yes, that is.
Okay. Yeah. Sex on the beach.
You're getting better. It was very.
I'm getting closer. Very fruitful.
Frou-frou.
Not a Long Island iced tea.
I would say frou-frou and very kind of like.
Oh, frou-frou.
Like New York City 2008.
A Manhattan.
Girlier.
A Shirley Temple with tequila.
Sex Machine's favorite.
Oh. I forget.
That girl had a Cosmo.
A Cosmo. There we go. You see, I was thinking Manhattan and Cosmo in the same line. Damn. Of course she had a Cosmo. That makes a lot of sense. Oh, I actually really miss Aaron and Nikisha a lot. Those are two very, very, very lovely souls.
It was so good to see them. Really, and that has been Kevin's Corner. Oh.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Oh. Kevin, it was Kevin's a nice travels. To be in.
It was super fun. My parents loved it. The show was incredible. Everything
so
about
glad. It. See them. Oh my God. It's so crazy that they're going to be in Philly. Like I'm going to go visit them at least twice because I love them so much and I miss them so much.
How long were you on tour with them?
A year and a half.
Oh, wow. Did you open that tour?
Yeah, I was there for a minute. I opened that tour. Yeah. I was cast. Oh my God. This year is what? 2021. This December is my 4-year anniversary.
Maybe. Who knows
what year it is.
It's crazy to think that next August will be the 5th year anniversary of when I got hired.
Oh, wow. So what's the, for you, having been on the tour and now, you know, in Manhattan, aside from the fact that like you don't tour, you don't move around with the show, like for you, what's the biggest change or difference between doing the tour and then doing the Broadway production in the one theater always?
The biggest thing for me is that when you are on tour, the show is your life. When you are in Manhattan, the show is kind of a 9-to-5. And I don't say that with any kind of negative or positive spin on it. That's just kind of the reality of what it is. Because there are a lot of ways that I kind of miss that the show was my life because that was all I did. You know what I mean? Like when I was on tour, it was literally just like, what am I doing to make sure that I can get to the theater tonight? But when you're in New York, I was actually talking about this with a couple other people who were on the Angelica or who are in Chicago. Like coming to the Broadway company is so amazing, but you also feel like when you're on Broadway, you feel like you have to do other things outside of it. Like it can't just be like, I just do this. And obviously we're trying to change the culture of what it means to be an actor and what it means to be on Broadway and all these different things, which is wonderful. But I think that there's still a little bit of that pressure of like, hey, I'm doing this reading and I'm doing that workshop and I'm doing this potential guest star on this show and, you know, all these different things. And so I think that when you're in New York, there is so much, there's a little bit of pressure in terms of not necessarily allowing yourself to only focus on the show. I think sometimes there's a little bit of pressure to be doing a million things at once. Like, you know, there's 54 Below shows and there's Green Room 42 shows. Mm-hmm. And like, there's always all these different things happening. But when you're on tour, it's like, I'm on tour. So that's what I do. I'm on tour, you know? Sure. Yeah, and that has its ups and downs. Cause when I was, and that was part of the reason I left, because when I was on tour, I was like, I can't just do this anymore. Like it was almost driving me crazy to the point where I would go on stage and forget my lines because I had done it so many times and I was on, and I had been in, I was driving to every single city and each drive was 12 hours. And it's not that I hated it. It was just like, I was like, I just feel cyclical. Like it feels very Truman Show-like right now. And I kind of need to break out of that. So that was kind of the reason I left tour. But at the same time, I really miss waking up like in a hotel or an Airbnb and being like, I'm going to go to SoulCycle and then get a nice lunch and then go do the show and, you know, and just, and then go back to my hotel and sleep. And, you know, and that's kind of it. And like, I'm just like, that's kind of my thing. And I'm not saying that's everybody's tour experience, but that was very much my tour experience where I was kind of not doing shit. Parts of that I miss.
Yeah. So my question for you there is, you talked about extracurriculars in the city. I know you have a Muppet podcast. Let's talk a little bit about that. Baby. You love the Muppets. I'll open the floor up to you.
Yeah. I'm sure there's going to be like a couple of people who listen to the podcast and go, he doesn't have one. He hasn't updated in months.
Like they're like pushing the hard.
They're like, he had one, no longer. I do have one. I think so. Let's get really real. So basically, in November of 2020, I straight up was like,
for everyone,
it was a wonderful time. I personally found things about myself that were really delightful. No, actually, the exact opposite. I low-key had a nervous breakdown and was like, hey, I don't think I can afford financially or emotionally to live in New York during this time right now. And so I moved in back with my mom in Miami. And I took a job teaching and was kind of driving for Uber Eats and, you know, just kind of doing what I could to like pick up, you know, some spare bucks so that I could pay off my storage unit and pay off some bills and debt and yada, yada, yada. And during that time, I was knee deep in a lot of things. Like I had not just started picking up puppetry, but I started picking up puppetry again. And so a lot of my focus was doing that kind of stuff. I was writing and I was kind of like, I want a project to work on. And I started a podcast in the beginning of the pandemic called The Craft, which was this really exciting podcast that I kind of want to revive at some point, which was just
me talking about the movie The Craft.
Where I literally only talked about The Craft because I think witchcraft is genius and I don't know why we don't support it more. And I had my own coven. So basically I was talking to different artists that I love. The first episode was actually James. And, the way I set it up was that the first half I talked about the thing I wanted. I picked a project of theirs that I was really passionate about. And I asked them basically all the really nerdy questions I wanted to ask them about it without sounding creepy. The podcast was a great excuse to ask people that. And then the second half, I asked them to bring in a project that was very close to their heart. And then I would have a conversation with them about it. And most of them brought in projects that weren't famous, that weren't things that were in the limelight or things that they were working on and stuff.
So James wasn't like, my Tony Award winning performance in Aladdin.
No, we actually didn't talk about Aladdin at all. I asked him about Memphis. And then what did he talk to me about? Oh, he's going to punch me in the face. I don't remember what he brought in as his project. I obviously didn't care about it enough. I don't remember what his project was, but it wasn't the genie. It was something else that... it was something else that really did mean a lot to him. Oh, it was when he wrote for Marvel Comics. That's what we talked about. He wrote the Spider-Man comic, which I was kind of hoping he would talk about because I remember when he did that, I feel like everybody was kind of like, yeah, James, like James is so insanely famous and so in like his own category that like There's the story I really want to tell. I'll tell it, but I can't sell the details. But basically, over the pandemic, he FaceTimes me and goes, "Hey, man." And I'm like, "Hi, James." And he goes, "Guess where I am?" I'm like, "Where?" "I'm in Ireland." I'm like, "Okay, why are you in Ireland?" "I'm filming something, man." And then he tells me what he's filming. And I'm like, "What is wrong with you?" I'm like, "What time is it over there?" 3 a.m. Like, go to sleep. What?
That's amazing.
Like, go to bed. What's wrong with you? Oh my God. Then someone came to the door and was like, "Hey, we're kind of asleep. Can you like keep it up?" He's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to." He's like, "I'm being too loud. I'm gonna let you go." I love James so much. But basically, James is so famous that like sometimes he's doing things that like to the point where people are just kind of like, "Yeah, that's James." But when he announced that he was doing Marvel Comics, like I knew how much of a huge Marvel fan he was. And I reached out to him. I was like, "Dude, like, that's insane." I was like, "I know that you are like mind blown right now." And so, you know, and he still talks about that time, and he has so much gratitude for that, you know, process and the fact that he got to write for Marvel. And I think that was such a really unique experience. But anyway, all of that to say, that podcast ended up faltering just because I didn't have the equipment I wanted. And kind of what ended up honestly happening with Muppets, basically, it was around the summer that I started doing this, and I got to a place where I was like, well, unemployment is not enough right now, because they had just stopped being, they had like cut up. You remember they did, it was no longer the extra that they were supplying. So I started looking for jobs. I was looking for like literal, like, you know, odd jobs that I could do. And so I worked in a bunch of random different places, and I just didn't have time to do it anymore. I also was very picky about the sound, and it sounded like crap. Neither here nor there. But basically when I was back in Miami, they announced that the Muppet Show was coming to Disney Plus, which if you are a diehard Muppet fan, that was the craziest day ever, because up until this point, every single episode of the Muppet Show has not been available for purchase. It's not been available for viewing. There are episodes on Disney Plus that before they aired on Disney Plus had not been seen since they last aired in 1982. And so for us to have gotten, and we had been begging the Disney company, especially after, and when I say we, I mean we, I emailed them a crap load of times. there were a lot of us Muppet fans who were constantly emailing, "When are we getting season 4 and season 5? Oh, I don't tell the story. I didn't tell the story the way I'm going to rewind. Basically, in 2006, they released season 1. In 2007, they released season 2. In 2008, they released season 3. At the end of 2008, they announced that in 2009 or 2010, we're going to get season 4. We got DVD cover art. We got special bonus features potential, like kind of the episodes that we're going to do. And arguably the 4th and 5th season are the best seasons of the Muppet Show. They have some great guest stars. The writers and the performers really found their rhythm. And it's like a really, really strong show in those last 2 seasons. Never came again. We never heard anything about it. 10 years go by, because that was 2009. So low-key, like 12 years go by. And finally, they announced that they're coming to Disney Plus. It was crazy. And I was saying to myself, I was like, you know, it would be awesome. Like, if somebody did a podcast where, like, they went episode by episode, and then, like, people could, like, listen along and, like, you know, do a kind of thing. Like, that would be so cool. And then I don't know what happened, but one day I just woke up and was like, shit. I have to do that. And it didn't leave me alone for days. And Nick Walker, who I did the tour with, basically had been telling me, you know, Broadway Podcast Network is always looking for new things. Dori Bernstein, who runs the network, was like, she probably would love to meet you. And then I was like, Dori Bernstein, I know that name. And I realized James had actually texted me and said, "Hey, I actually know somebody who used to work for Imagineering who worked on Muppet Vision 3D with Jim Henson." And I realized this while I was pitching her my show. And the only reason I realized it was because she went really silent, put her finger over her mouth, and just started smiling. And I was like, this is either a really terrible pitch or she's really digging the idea. And I kind of realized, oh, this is the same Dory. And as soon as I finished, Brittany Bigelow, shout out, love her, no longer with Broadway Podcast Network. Makes me so depressed, but we love Brittany. Brittany just starts laughing as soon as I finish. And she goes, I cannot believe this right now. And Dory goes, I don't usually just green light on the spot, but you're green lit. And I was like, okay. And so, you know, I had the first episode out within 2 weeks after that. And then I did it somewhat consistently. What happened was by the time I released the fifth episode, which was around May or June, they had announced that Broadway was coming back. I was trying to make plans to move to New York, and I had to start kind of figuring out like what my life was going to be basically. And so I kind of put it on hiatus involuntarily. And then about a month ago, I purposely was like, I'm not going to work on this for a while. I am coming back soon. I did watch the most recent episode that I'm going to record 2 days ago. So I am going to record very soon. And as soon as I get my schedule together, new episodes are coming.
Great.
Because I love doing the show. It's so much fun. It's literally just me talking shit, and it's what I love to do most. And yeah, so amazing. Yes, that very long journey was about what it's time to meet the Muppets. So I literally just go moment by moment at each episode of the Muppet Show, and I'm like, this was funny because I like this song because, you know, Kermit's funny in this scene because that's literally the entire podcast. And people, for some reason, listen to it.
And do you have guests awesome. Or it's just you and the episode?
One episode I've had a guest so far, my good friend Noel McNeil, who, if anybody watched Bear in the Big Blue House, he played yes. Bear. He's also my like puppet father. Like he has taken me under his wing and has been teaching me a lot of, you know, his puppetry powers. He is an underrated legend in the Jim Henson world. Like he was Loki the first, like not Loki, he was the first African-American puppeteer to work for the company. And one of his first jobs was the understudy to Big Bird. And so he has performed the bird so many times and nobody really knows it.
Sure.
He obviously played Bear, but he also did like Eureka's Castle, and he did Ubi, and he did a million other shows. He's done so much work, and he's also genuinely the nicest person I have truly ever met in my life. He and his entire family are so kind to me for no reason. I've gotten along with him very, very well. And he's also performed the character of Sweetums a lot. And I had an episode where I talked about original Muppet performer Richard Hunt, who unfortunately passed away from AIDS back in the early 1990s. And I kind of had like a good chunk of the episode kind of talking about who Richard Hunt was. And to me, he's one of the best performers from that era because he has a veracity in his performance that was so clear that people talk about Jim Henson and people talk about Frank Oz. And like, there are obviously geniuses in their own right. Like they're brilliant puppeteers, obviously, but Richard Hunt was such a genius character actor, and even his technique I really appreciated. And so Noel's performed Sweetums a lot because he's really good with full body characters. And so I had Noel on to kind of talk to me about when he worked with Richard Hunt, when he worked with Jim Henson and Frank Oz, and kind of tell me about how he manipulates Sweetums and the mechanics of manipulating Sweetums, because that is my thing that I really want to get into on the podcast in future episodes, is like really getting into some of the nitty gritty details that like a lot of people don't talk about with the puppetry stuff. Like I've never heard anybody really go in depth, talk about how Sweetums is performed and like some of the things that can go wrong. Like, so a lot of the performers, you know, not a lot, the Henson technique involves you looking at a monitor so that you can see your performance. But when you're inside of Sweetums, there's not enough room for a monitor. So you're going off of what you see, and you can only see him through his mouth. And the only time you can see him through his mouth is when you open it to have him speak. And so Noel was trying to explain to me the mechanics of that. And it's so crazy fascinating, but that's never really been talked about before. So I'm really trying to like bring out some of those like, yeah, interesting details and stuff like that. And you know, I think I have to really break down what I'm just telling the whole world my process, which I think is great. I have to figure out like what I want to do with the show, because I'm not saying I hate the format that it is right now, but I do find it a little stale. And I think that I can make it quicker. I think I can make it more fun for the audience. Because right now, I think it's fun for me. I don't know if it's fun for
the audience. Yeah, but that's where it starts.
That's the first step.
Yeah. But that is where it starts. Exactly. I don't think I put out bad shows. I just think that there's a tighter way to do it. You know what I'm saying? And absolutely. So I'm kind of in a process also right now of like, am I going to reframe it? Am I going to restructure it? And yada, yada, yada. But anyway, yeah, cool. It's time to meet the Muppets. The first 5 episodes are out. I'm very proud of them. More you should listen. Soon. No, the first 6 episodes, I think, actually.
Cool. Should we play a Muppet game?
Yeah. Absolutely. You can steal this for your show if you'd like. I have my Lights of Broadway show cards right here. Speaking of Miss Dory and Squiggs, of course, I'm just kind of going to go through someone say when. These are all shows.
Okay.
We'll pick a show and we just have to decide what character from that show should remain a person. And then the rest of the cast is Muppets.
And then the rest are Muppets. Oh, this is my favorite game. Okay.
And so we can cast the person if we want, or we can just say it and we're done.
All right. We're so also going to cast when. The person. Yes.
Yeah.
When?
A little night music.
Oh, beautiful.
Interesting.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Angela Lansbury character should stay as a human and everyone else is a Muppet.
Because she's kind of like the elder and like watching the shenanigans around her.
Or if we really want to make it comedy, Henrik is the only human.
I like that.
Wait, I like both of those for different reasons.
I only want Henrik. He would be so stressed the entire time.
He would be so stressed because he'd be like, Am I crazy?
Yeah, exactly.
Am I real?
Yeah.
I mean, it writes itself because Piggy is Desiree Armfelt.
Yeah, no question.
Like,
Kermit would be a great Frederick, I think. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that works out perfectly. I also want Andrew Barth Feldman to play Henrik. Because I think, I know, and I hope Andrew hears this. Because he is a Muppet, first of all, but also everyone has been trying to tell, like, you need to get with Andrew because he loves Disney parks and Muppets. And Andrew, I've added you on Twitter a lot, and I understand you're more famous than me, but sir, I think you and I would have a very fun time. So I hope you listen to Broadway Sit and you hear me now.
Get on it.
And now we have a project to pitch him.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
I would see that. I would see that in a second.
That production would be incredible.
Oh, absolutely. Like awesome. Fozzie and Kermit singing the women's song.
Oh, the Have I Got a Girl for You?
No, that's a different show. When they're in the foot bath, that whole song.
Oh, God.
I can't stop thinking about the idea of like, them trying to sing A Weekend in the Country and then the Electric Mayhem comes in and like tries to turn it rock and you just hear Animal going weekend and that's it. it just goes to crap.
So instead of Disney turning their rides into things with Muppets like Haunted Mansion, they should just take Sondheim musicals.
They should literally just take Sondheim musicals and turn them into Muppets.
A Muppet into the Woods? Come on.
I don't know why that hasn't happened yet. That would actually happen.
It was supposed to happen.
So hold on. Okay. I'm sorry. I have to be this person because I am a bevy of knowledge. That whole Muppets Into the Woods it's slightly true. What it was there was a production of Into the Woods that was supposed to happen. That was a film that the Henson Company was hired to be a part of. And they were going to do creatures for it. It wasn't necessarily the Muppets, but Henson Company was contacted to do some stuff for it, but it was not the Jim Henson Muppet characters that were attached. I'm sorry to burst everyone's bubble, but
this is the truth. Now it will be.
Sorry about it. Come watch my show and you'll get your bubble busted even more.
Great pitch.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. I just keep picturing just like Sweetums on a Broadway stage in anything.
That needs to happen. That needs to happen rather quickly.
Well, how would you do like a Broadway production of Muppets? I guess that's because isn't
it gets complicated
the way it's performed. Yeah.
So the whole thing, they've actually tried a number of times. They've tried a number of times to, they've had workshops and stuff like that. And Alex Timbers was attached to it at one point. The whole issue with Muppets on Broadway is just like the way you were saying it. The way that it's filmed is that, you know, it has to be in a way that the performers are able to, you know, not be seen.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it Avenue Q style. It's not the same thing. It's a very different
game. No, totally.
So there are a couple ways in my mind over the years that I've thought about this, which, yes, I've thought about this. You can pull a Treasure Island, a Christmas Carol, a Haunted Mansion, and take a classic story and put the Muppet characters on it.
Sure.
That way you don't have to worry about mimicking voices. You can pre-record a lot of it and just have really talented puppeteers who know how to lip sync and perform to pre-recorded tracks, perform it.
That
you also
sense.
Could apply this somewhat same terminology if you wanted to do some sort of regular Muppet show or something like that. And then you just have to build the set in a way that would make it performer friendly, which is very possible.
Mm-hmm.
It would be expensive. It would be very, very expensive, but it is very possible.
That's so interesting. So, yeah. The idea of like, you almost do it a la, what's it called? With Mulaney and
like, Oh, Hello.
Oh, Hello. Yeah. Where like, mm-hmm. it's a similar show every night, but then maybe there's a segment where the famous
person
comes
up. And, you know, all kinds of different stuff. And you know, there's all kinds of stuff that can be done with that.
Because I'm sure, you know, like behind the scenes, there's more of like, you know, this person can only do the voice of Kermit now. And this person can only do this. So like, you can't necessarily lock them into 8 shows a week when they have other,
it's actually impossible because 9 times out of 10, if you're a Muppet performer, you're also a Sesame Street performer. You might be doing Fraggle Rock. You might be doing other Henson projects. You might be doing other theater projects. And so the main 6 guys right now, say that again, Kevin, I'm sorry.
I just say they would have to license a whole new cast of people to be able to perform those
parts. Yeah, and the one thing that's been complicated with the Muppets in terms of the way that Disney handles this is that sometimes, and somebody from Disney will probably call me and be like, that's not true, but it is true. They have somewhat tried to handle the Muppets the way they handle the Fab Five of the Disney characters, where it's like, okay, Alwyn was the voice of Mickey for this many years, but he has 2 understudies. And now Brett Irwin, I think his name is, or Brett Erwick. I can't remember his last name. I think it's Brett Irwin. Brett Irwin and Chris Diabada, the one who was in The Office and Waitress, is also, they're both voices of Mickey, right? And depending on the project, they both kind of split those recording tracks. It can't work with the Muppets in that way because it's not about the voice with the Muppets. It's about the actual performance. Everything about puppetry. And it's hard because a lot of people, when they think of Cookie Monster, they think of this. They think me cookie, me like cookies. You know what I mean? They think of the voice, but the whole reason that Frank Oz was able to come up with that voice was based on the improv that they did around the sketch at the time. And it just so happened that that voice came out. And for him, it was about the character that led to that. And so it's all very much acting character-based work. And so you can't have multiple people playing Kermit, multiple people playing Fozzie. And that's part of the reason it's really hard to come up with a Broadway version of this show, because you can't have somebody on Broadway doing Kermit and Matt Vogel doing Kermit, because only Matt Vogel is Kermit. You know what I mean? That's how the Muppets work. And so that's why, for me, in my mind, it's like, well, pre-recorded segments. Like, that's the only way that it works. And to be honest, when it comes to Broadway, is that valid? Does that work? Would that be great? Is that count as Broadway? Like, is it worth investing money into something like that? Like, these are all the kind of questions that kind of come with that make it very difficult, which is why I think it hasn't happened yet. But there has been workshops. Schumacher has been interested in doing something like that.
Sure.
I obviously have spoken to him a million times about this, because the way that I'm talking about it, it's clear that I'm somewhat his assistant or something. This is how much time I spend on Wikipedia. This is why I have issues.
Fergie is an intern at the Jim Henson Studio on the side.
Very clearly.
But
it's crazy. It's a really hard thing. And it's something that Avenue Q actually faced in its later years when they started, because John Tartaglia, Stephanie DeBruzzo, and Jen Bernhardt and Rick Lyon, when they are all puppeteers first. And I don't want to speak for them, but they had all worked on Sesame Street and with Jim Henson and the Muppets and all these different things. And so they were brought onto the show first as puppet specialists who also knew how to have really great stage theater performances because they're all actors in their own right as well. But when the show became really successful and started continuing on and then went on to off-Broadway, like it became difficult because not everybody's a puppeteer. And so when you're bringing on actors to take on these roles, you know, a lot of them did not sound like the way Nikki originally sounded. A lot of them did not even have the kind of technique that was applied. And that became very difficult for the puppet people in that production to kind of maintain. And that is one of those things that becomes difficult when you're trying to keep a character consistent with something. You know what I mean? And it doesn't work in the same way that me taking over Hercules Mulligan, because this is such a terrible analogy, but it would be different if I was putting on the flesh suit of Oak versus just putting on his clothes. And that's the biggest difference between that kind of thing is that we're all putting on the same sock. So there has to be a continuity that comes with that. And it can only really
come. You can't bring yourself to Kermit the Frog.
You can't just bring yourself to Kermit the Frog. Like you have to find Kermit the Frog. And first of all, that takes years to do once you get hired. And then you're going to do that for like a long amount of, like, you know, Jim did it from the 50s until he passed away in 1990. Steve Whitmire did it from 1990 until, unfortunately, he got fired in 2017. And now Matt's doing it, and he's probably going to do it for another almost 20 years. You know what I mean? And that's just kind of the culture. It's why the Muppets work, because that's the way that it's applied. And I think it can be frustrating for especially Disney corporate entities to kind of deal with that kind of mindset. But it's why the Muppets work in the way that they do.
Well, on that note, that does bring us to the end of our episode.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Have I been talking that long?
We've all been talking that long.
We've all been talking that long.
No, it's been an hour. I've been talking too much. There has to be one more question. There has to be one more question.
I mean, so this is what we'll do. I'm going to pose the question. I'll do our like sign off. And then before we sign off, you give your one word answer.
Okay, fine. That's fair.
Great.
Okay. Who's your favorite Muppet?
I hate this question.
Okay. Jesus. So thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You can follow us on things like Broad Wasted. You can find us on things like Twitter and Instagram. You can join our Facebook group. We do theater nerdy stuff there. Find us on Patreon. You can see all of our fun stuff that we do behind the scenes. And some we're doing a lot of movies there now, so you can see all of that. You can find us on things like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. Five stars, please.
Thank you.
And then you can, of course, find us on the Broadway Podcast Network along with the Muppets. And so with that, I leave you with our final quote, which is, why do we always come here? I guess we'll never know. It's kind of like a torture to have to watch the show. But we're going to leave it with you, Fergie. We're all going to count to three, and you have to tell us your favorite Muppet. One, two, three.
So when I was born, there was this idea that when... terrible. No, it's a character called Clifford, and most people might not know who this character is. It's from a TV show in the 90s when... Here we go. History lesson. So basically, Jim Henson died in 1990. When he died, Jim Henson was making a deal originally with Michael Eisner when he was the CEO of the Disney company for Disney to acquire the Muppets. Obviously, after Jim Henson died, that deal basically kind of fell through. However, Disney signed a production deal with them, basically, where they were allowed to do two movies and three TV shows. One of those TV shows was Dinosaurs, which was a really great TV show on Disney Plus that you should watch. Another show was called Aliens in the Family. Did not last long. And then the third show was a Muppet-related TV show called Muppets Tonight.
Yes!
So Muppets Tonight is actually a really wonderful show. Every single episode's on YouTube. I probably shouldn't have said that, but it's true. I watch it all the time. And the main host of that is a guy named Clifford, who is this catfish, Rastafarian-haired Muppet that is purple and sounds like this. "This is Clifford." That's literally how he talks. He's my favorite ever. He was played by Kevin Clash, who played, who was the original Elmo, and now does a lot of stuff for the Henson Company, like Dark Crystal, and teaches a lot of the puppeteers now. But that character is so cool. But it was also one of the first Muppets that I was like, that is very clearly a black Muppet. And I very much identified with that, obviously. And also, I just loved the design of him. Like, he literally looks like a catfish. He's purple. And then he had these orange, red, and yellow dreads. And they were gorgeous. It's a beautifully designed puppet. And it's my favorite character. Cool. Did I talk enough? I feel like I just gave you all a Muppet history lesson. And I don't think people are going to care that much. This is like my biggest fear that I'm just spitting all my Wikipedia knowledge at people.
I was there for it. I was here.
No, please do not worry about it. That is what we do.
Please bring me back so I can talk about things people care about, like musicals. Like, I feel so terrible.
No, we will come back together to redo the Muppets A Little Night Music.
Yes, there we go. And I will come, and then we'll make sure Andrew is here so he can play.
Yes,
so he can play Henrik.
That's the plan.
Perfect.
Done. Yes.
Well, we end with raising a glass, and we say,
"Cheers!" Cheers.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.